Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my man who can see the future into movies if they were made in 2003. It's Frank. How are you today?
I'm good. We're here out in the dunes for some reason. I'm sure that will become apparent later.
It will become apparent. Yeah. Maybe I'll turn you into a giant worm or a spider or some other creature that maybe sees the future.
I'm just here for the popcorn bucket.
Oh. Frank, we are here on Beer with Geeks to talk about what we're drinking. First and foremost, what are you drinking today?
I am drinking, you know, Tim, I've been sort of hanging on to this for a bit, but winter is actually sort of approaching its end.
You wouldn't know by that,
here.
But the amount of pumpkin ale in my fridge right now. But...
okay, well, you know, that's between you and your brewer.
No, to be fair, my father-in-law brought them over and he was like, I got some left. Do you want some? And I said, absolutely. So
well, yeah, you don't say no.
You don't say no to pumpkin. I don't care what time of year it is.
Don't look a gift ale in the mouth.
Exactly. You
know, mm-hmm. Yeah. But as winter is coming to an end, I thought I should have my last Wormtown Brewery Blizzard of 78
nice.
English style brown ale.
I love that can.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Isn't it great? Yeah. The snowman and the the whole snowman on this one. The
cars covered. Yeah. What's the sign read? What is the welcome to
it
sign?
It says welcome to Wormtown. Entering Wormtown.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
What kind of beer is it? I don't think you've actually had this on the show before.
Yeah, it's great. I love this one. So it's a English style brown ale with coffee beans added. It's great. It's got a nice little, you know, good coffee has like a sweetness to it of its own, and like this has a sweet sort of aftertaste that almost like a milk stout has. But I think it's the coffee. I think it's sort of the aftertaste of the coffee that I'm getting off of it.
I also think brown ale is severely underrated.
Oh yeah, I think brown ales are yes, like, I think they are.
We don't talk about, like, people just like jump right to a port or right to a stout or something like that. Yep. But like that in between ground is just lovely.
Yes, yeah, I agree. I agree.
It's a Goldilocks beer.
It's really good. Now it has to be done well because it's not always done right.
Correct.
But this one I love. What's the old brown dog? There's one I can't remember whose that is. But there's another. Yeah, there's a few really good brown ales, and I agree. A good one is hard to beat.
I'm gonna find one good brown ale before winter's over. You know, in like the 3 weeks we have before spring.
Sure.
Whatever. I want to find one more. Although, I mean, beginning of spring is usually not exactly known for its warmth, so...
Yeah, you know, and you do have the occasional cold snap, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Spoilers for the future.
Spoilers for future beers on this podcast. Well, Frank, I have, to quote my physician, I have a touch of the bronchitis right now, and so I'm not supposed to be drinking alcohol with my antibiotics, I think. No one's ever actually told me that. I just feel like that's a good idea, right? You're not supposed to drink when you have medicine. That's like a thing.
With a lot of medicines, yeah.
Correct. So anyway, so I'm drinking a Lagunitas Brewing Hoppy Refresher, which is their sparkling hop water.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Nice. What flavor do you got?
This one is Hoppy Refreshers. I guess it's just their Hoppy Refresher.
Nice.
It's got a citrusy zing to it.
Nice.
Carbonated water, hop extract, and natural flavors.
Hmm.
Oh yes. It is excellent. It's really good. I
not a personal flotation device. No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Abide by the Sturgeon General and will float on...
The Sturgeon General?
A-I-I. Good stuff. It's really good. I have this one and a Sierra Nevada one, and like the Sierra Nevada one tastes like beer. Like, you know.
Yeah,
that,
okay.
You know, that
okay.
one tastes like a really light beer. I don't know. Like, this one is refreshing and hoppy. I don't know if it tastes like beer.
No. Yeah, I guess not.
Maybe it does. Like a, it's got like a, maybe like a non-dry Corona like to it or something like that.
Okay. Okay. I mean, yeah, but I guess the very light taste of hops might be what you're getting there. Yeah.
Indeed. It's really good. But anyway, so I will be drinking something next time, but for now I'm going to abide by the Sturgeon General. And
yes, yes, exactly. Follow the Sturgeon General's warning. And let's talk about some movies.
Indeed, we each saw a movie. This is a new segment.
Unfortunately, not the same one.
This is a new segment called "We Can't Get Our Act Together."
That's not a new segment.
That's been going since episode one, baby. Yeah. we each saw a movie. One of them was really good, and one of them I don't know because I didn't see it. And so. But this, I think, is going to be the new Barbaheimer of our podcast, of our time. You saw Madame Web,
mm-hmm.
potentially referred to as Madame Web in the movie. I have no idea. You saw Madame Web. I saw Dune Part 2, affectionately known as Dune.
Stupid.
Anyway, I actually saw it. I saw Dumptu at the, I saw it at a fan event back in February.
Oh.
I saw it a week before the release. My buddy at work was like, let's go see Dune. And I was like, absolutely. I need somebody to invite me to go to things. Otherwise I just won't go to them.
Sure. Yes.
So let's go. We were going to go the Saturday that it opened. And he's like, I got tickets to the fan event. You want to go in February instead? I'm like, yes, I want to see it early and mm-hmm. lord it over nobody. Because I didn't tell anybody. I did the opposite of what you're supposed to do at a fan event. You know, like you're supposed to like go on, you know, like you're supposed to go to social media. Like this is amazing. This movie was amazing.
Sure,
like
yeah,
the
yeah.
unwritten contract of why those things exist. I didn't do any of that because I gave up social media for Lent. So
there you go.
So I didn't do any of that. And you saw Madame Web. So
I did.
Let's say on a scale of 1 to 5. Well, what's Madame Web like?
A 3.
Really? That's better than yeah. like everybody says it is. So tell me more.
Yeah. It's fine. Like it's the most fine movie, not the finest, mind you, but the most fine.
Got it.
Movie that I've ever seen. It's honestly very forgettable. So like I have no harsh opinion or strong like in one way or the other. It's just yeah.
That was
that.
I spent time with my eyes watching something. Now, okay, so if you, all right, so you said it's fine, but you have, like, I would call it a hate-loathing relationship with the Sony Spider-Verse, as I recall.
Yes, that's true. Mostly, I just really hated Venom.
I know. Going to see Venom with you was one of the most hilarious experiences of my life because
I was so angry at how bad it was.
From seats over, like how much of your time was being wasted. And it's not even like you're like, my time is precious and I value every second of it. You're like, whatever. We could have a good time doing absolutely nothing. But you were not into that movie. And that was a movie that was like, it was fine. It's just like a movie that is forgettable.
For me, that one was egregiously bad, and apparently we have you know, I'm in that position now where I'm like, what? It's fine. It's not that bad. And everyone else is like, no, it's egregious. I'm like, oh,
well, I feel like a lot of people who say that it's egregious is because it's Madame Web. Like,
I guess,
you know, like it's got women in it. You know,
I mean, yes, you know, see also the Marvels, right? Like,
sure.
that
which is also a movie that is fine. Like,
also, a movie that is fine. That movie is a lot better than this movie, though. Like, that's actually a fun, good movie.
Yes.
That one just got hated on because it, I think just because it was okay, and mm-hmm. but it was all women, so they yeah. But this movie, I feel like it's actually just like it's not as good, so it doesn't have that going for it. But it's just okay. It was all right, you know. It is very much a movie that is an homage to the time that it is from, like in terms of filmmaking techniques. You know, you get a lot of the nostalgia. Of the fashion and all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, I remember that 20 years ago. But,
So here's my question. So you call it a homage to the style of comic book movies from the early 2000s.
Sure, yes.
But is it that, or is it just 20 years behind the times?
You know, it could just be that Sony still thinks it's 2003. Honestly, that would not surprise me.
Because, like, if you watch Venom 2, Electric Boogaloo, like, whatever the second one's called. Let There Be Venom. Yes. No. Let There Be Carnage. Yes. You were actually really close. It sounded right in my head. Some of their other ones. What are the other Sony ones?
Let Venom Ring.
Let Venom Ring. Right. mm-hmm. That's another one.
Not at the Museum 3, Venom.
No, there's got to be one. There's got to be one more Sony one, right? Right?
Carnage, Venom. I don't know what
the
else.
Two
what
Venoms
other,
but... and this one, Craven's coming. That hasn't come out yet. But even the trailer for that one also looks like it was like, you know, circa 2003.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the bottom of the barrel. They are scraping the bottom of the spider barrel because it's what they have.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they're like, it's use it or lose it. So we're going
to
use it.
Right. They don't have to be good. They just have to be made so they keep the copyright. So they're basically exactly. like making mediocre movies,
yes.
or bad movies or whatever, forgettable movies to keep the copyright to like pump out hopefully an Into the Spider-Verse every 5 years.
I guess
basically what they're doing, right?
Yeah, I guess.
It seems
yeah.
like a colossal waste of money
yeah.
and people's time.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
so anyway,
I guess, yeah.
Anyway. So you call it you call it a homage to 2003.
That's overstating it, but let's go with that.
Yeah. You know, but like, what does that
yeah, sure.
what does that mean exactly? Like, what is that style?
Okay, it is a very predictable origin story plot.
Okay.
I mean, same basic. Template as, you know, Sam Raimi Spider-Man, whatever.
Okay.
but it has the you've got Dakota Johnson. I'm spoiling this movie.
Oh,
by
I
the
don't
way,
care.
Just
My
in
own,
case
please.
That wasn't clear for anybody.
Yeah, please do.
You know, Dakota Johnson learns that she has this history with her mom and the spider in the jungle. And that she was bit by the spider when she was pregnant with her. And so all these years later, now she can. Wow. I'm actually impressed how badly I'm describing this movie. But she now she can see into the future, like a few minutes or a few seconds. And she's learning how to control this power.
I have questions. OK,
go for it.
So spiders, famous, seers into the future, the spider. Right.
Yeah.
So, but is
it's,
this like
there's,
the, like,
there's,
the quote, like the spidey sense, like precognitive ability?
It is similar. Yes, it is. It is clearly supposed to be similar to that or derivative of that in some way. But
it's
not
an enhanced spider in any way, right? It's just
it's
like
not,
a regular spider.
It is not
Morbius.
A,
that's the other Sony movie.
Morbius and Morbin Time.
Yes. I knew there was another one. Didn't see it, though. So
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was it. There's a legend attached to this spider. There's a group in the who live out in the where this was supposed to have taken place. Forgive me, I watched this about 2 weeks ago, and like I said, it's very forgettable. So a lot of the details are starting to get blipped from my mind. Mm-hmm. But the long story short is that there is this spider in the woods that bit her mother. Cassie Webb's mom. I mean, come on, Cassie Webb. And
it's
Marvel.
It's yeah. It's yeah. You have to work with what the comics were at, you know, whatever. Victor Von Doom becomes Dr. Exactly. Doom. Like, you know, you just got to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Dakota Johnson actually was maybe the most interesting thing about the movie, because she did what she was given. She did what she was given. It didn't make, like, the movie didn't make a lot of sense, but she did what she was given. She was as likable as a character could be. She just weirdly starts seeing into the future. Starts, like, she sees, like, a coworker who's about, she's an EMT. She's about to see it. She's a coworker who's about to be killed in an accident. She sees it, and then it happens. She's having these visions, you know, a few minutes before they happen. She gets a vision that these three young girls, one of whom is Sydney Sweeney, were about to get attacked on the subway. So she rescues them from that, and they spend the entire movie on the run from the villain who was attacking these three girls because he has a vision. He also has the same spider power, by the way.
Was he bit by the same spider in the Amazon?
He was seeking that spider. He was with Cassie's mom when it bit her, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
He's been seeking that spider, and because he's trying to harness its power, its energy.
But how can he see into the future if he wasn't bitten by that spider?
He also has powers.
Oh, he just has them.
Yeah, he has them.
Oh, but wait, so. So what's her name? Cassie Webb? Cassie Webb. Cassie. So Cassie Webb's mom, Mrs. Webb, got...
Yes.
Mama Webb got bit by this spider that has the power to see into the future. Yeah. You know, Web Sense, TM. And so, like, the baby got that power. That's why she can see... And that's why Cassie Webb can see into the future.
Correct.
Okay, fine. This other guy, it's Ezekiel Stane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Ezekiel Stane wants this spider's power. He wants to harness it, but he has that power without getting bit by this spider. He just has it anyway.
Yeah. There's something. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a detail in there, an important one that I'm forgetting, but, like, I don't care.
Or it just wasn't in the movie. Which is awesome.
One of those is true.
Oh, well. It's okay. Please continue.
Yeah. He has a vision that these three girls on the subway are going to be heroes of their own someday, and that they're going to kill him. So he has to kill them.
One of them being the DCU's new Hawk Girl, Isabella Merced.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I'm not sure which one of the three besides, you know, Sydney Sweeney that she is not like, but because I don't know their names, so I can't tell you. But
sure.
It's one of them.
Sure.
Yes.
All three of them gave great performances. I really, really did bring me back to 2003 because, like, I was, you know, we were their age in 2003, teenage girls. So
that hurts inside. Oh my God.
Also, like, completely ridiculous that we're still putting Sydney Sweeney in the role of, like, a 15-year-old. Like, come on, the woman's 27 years old or whatever she is. Like, she doesn't look like a teenager anymore. Anyway.
Wait, they're supposed to be teenagers?
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. Sure. Please. All right. Please.
Ridiculous.
I thought they were the same age as Cassie Webb, but that's fine.
No, she's 30 and she's turning 30 and
that's like
they're
a
all
part of the movie. Like,
yeah. Oh, okay. She's turning 30, but they're teenagers. So it's like, they're like in real life, these people are like 5 years apart, but we're pretending that they're okay. Whatever.
Fine.
That's what we're dealing with. And so she's helping them escape from the situation. Now, a few things happen.
The situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whoa, twist.
She steals a cab.
Okay.
To help them, you know, in their, while they're on the run, a New York City cab. They drive it to somewhere in the middle of nowhere in New Jersey. They end up in the woods in a cab. I cannot stress to you enough how that is not possible.
Cabs will not do that. They are not built for such things.
You couldn't get off the road into the woods to be driving a cab in the woods in New Jersey. You couldn't do that and still be within 20 minutes of Manhattan or whatever it's supposed to have been. Like, you just couldn't. Anyway, this has been Frank's something is inaccurate in a movie about New York corner.
Something. The geography is wrong.
Yeah, exactly. The view wouldn't look like that from that side. Yeah, exactly. So she does this. Oh, by the way, her coworker, Cassie's coworker,
right?
is Ben Parker.
Okay, that was a rumor a while ago. And yes. So, because this was them, yeah. like, how is it connected to any of this? So he's Ben Parker.
He's Ben Parker.
Married to May? Not doesn't know May?
Dating.
Dating. Okay.
Yeah. There's a brief mention of her. And Cassie's like, ooh, this one sounds serious, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. His sister, Emma Roberts, is pregnant.
Okay.
With
Peter. Emma Roberts is in this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And she's pregnant with Peter. Okay.
Pregnant with Peter.
I see. Okay.
So he's excited to become Uncle Ben.
Gotcha. Bum, bum, bum.
And have
That's
a successful
Ford. That's
rice
called...
empire. anyway, from there, they go through all sorts of, she's constantly on the run. She's starting to learn how to harness her visions of the future until finally it culminates with her being able to get into a battle of sorts. He's using his powers and there's lots of Pepsi product placement in this movie, culminating in the big Pepsi Cola, light up sign. That's like across the river, from Manhattan, I guess on Brooklyn or Long Island City, maybe. Mm-hmm. Big famous neon Pepsi Cola sign. So
instead of a light in the sky, they have a Pepsi sign. Is that like the thing?
Yep.
You know, I actually like that better. That's okay.
Yeah,
that's better.
They have that, and they're fighting under that. That's the big set piece, and it's like crumpling around them and stuff. And she's able to use her vision of the future to see like when it's going to fall and get him to stand where it's going to fall and all this stuff. Great. It's smart. It's fun. It was a good fight scene. It was an interesting use of like that kind of a power. Mm-hmm. That's not a physical like combat power, but a like mind power. Right. And so like anticipating where someone's going to be and then using what you know is going to happen in the future to get them to be somewhere. That's going to, it was cool. And in the end, it turns out that, you know, he was afraid that these three girls were going to kill him, but actually it was her that he had to be afraid of. And that was his
twist.
Twist. Yeah.
How about the costumes?
So, the costumes, you know, you would have liked them.
Yeah.
You would have liked the costumes.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That is something I feel like Sony makes their Spider movies look great. Like they're so... Like the effects are good, the costumes are good, whatever. And then just like, oh, movies need a story? What?
Yeah.
What?
Who said
that?
Right.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're dealing with here. Yeah. Like it's like top heavy, you know, where it's like it's got all the things you just said going for it, a great cast, like all of this great stuff going for it, and then it just tips over because it's got nothing supporting it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's my 22 minutes on
I can't believe that Madam you actually Web. Talked about this movie for like, I mean, we, yeah, but 15 minutes about, you know,
yeah.
by the time that we started. Yeah. That's
which
actually
is, which
quite
is frankly more than it deserved.
This is quite impressive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So do you want me to tell you about Dune 2, I guess? Dune Part 2?
I do. I have a question. Does it pick off, does it pick up where I fell asleep last time?
You fell asleep in the first Dune?
No.
I'm crying inside. Well, yes and no. So I know that you actually do want to see Dune, and so I will not spoil it.
You can eat it as well. I don't care.
Because, okay. Well,
I mean, I'm going to see it probably, but I
all right, maybe I'll leave the ending. I'll leave the ending off, but maybe I'll spoil a few things. How's that?
Okay. Sure.
So it's really good. I don't think I liked it as much as the first one.
Okay.
But that might be because I've seen the first. I think I've seen the first one like 5 times now. Like I really liked it.
You spent 15 hours with that movie?
Wow. When you say it like that, it feels like I could have been doing something better with my time. But yeesh. yeah, I think like since it came out, in 2001, you know, we were home, right? We were in quarantine or just about when it came.
Yes.
We were like in not semi-quarantine.
You said 2001 and I was like, I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, no, 2021. Sorry. We were coming out of quarantine.
Yeah.
I didn't get to see it in theater, so I was excited to see. I saw this one in IMAX, whatever else. And
how was that?
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was the scope of the movie is deliberately interesting, which I like. You play with. I'm gonna get like filmy here, mm-hmm, if you
please.
Will. But like we like you play.
You
with,
are
like,
a master after all.
I am. You play with like three types of spaces in the movie. Like there's the outside desert, Arrakis, you know, mm-hmm, dune, you know, and then there's the opulence of the Harkonnen's home and planet, where they're just like a lot of really empty space, but it's like kind of like the desert, but it's man-made, it's structural. And then you also get the Padishah Emperor, and his space is like deliberately closed but open to outside greenery. Like it almost looks like a day spa. It's really interesting. Instead of like being like this huge palace, it's just like these really kind of smallish rooms that are sparsely furnished. And so it's like it was interesting to like see the juxtaposition between these characters' settings and what they were saying about them as people and whatever else. And so that's why, like, it's one of those movies that's like, it's thinking about all of the stuff, which is what I appreciated about the first one.
Sure.
And the second one, like, it's not just like, they don't go for the obvious every time.
Which is Villeneuve, like, that's his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to go for the obvious. Sometimes it works. I find that it works to his disadvantage sometimes. Like I knew what Arrival was doing like 15 minutes into Arrival. So I spent like 2 hours after that just waiting for it to go boom. And I went, yes, I know.
Right.
Like, and you're like, okay. Right. You know, and so like, I didn't love that, but Dune,
I get that. Yeah.
But Dune, I've read the book twice already. And so I like, kind of knew where everything was going already, so I wasn't watching it for like, oh, is there going to be a twist, or is it going to do something that's unexpected or anything? Like, I was just kind of expecting it to just like tell the story, which already like does the Villeneuve thing, so it's okay. I found it picks up pretty much right after the first one drops off. So
okay,
it's like the first one drops off after he murders that guy, Janie, in the, I can't remember his name, in the desert. And then, like, it's like 15 minutes later, and here we are.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's really closely tied together. But you can tell that everybody's having a good time. Like, and I think that's like, even though the work is serious, like, they all want to be there. Like they believe in what they're making. You can tell nobody really phones it in. The only one that arguably phones it in is Christopher Walken. Like as soon as like he creates like a striking visual, but then like as soon as he opens his mouth, he's like, well, yeah, go Christopher Walken.
You know?
And so like, I don't know what you were expecting when you get Christopher Walken, if he wasn't going to do his Christopher Walken thing, but anyway, it's the movie is like what I'm not sure I didn't love about it is that it shifts its pace about halfway through the movie. So like you kind of settle into this rhythm of like Paul learning to be a Fremen, right? And like, and then like this whole thing about like whether he is their Messiah or not, like this, like that the Bene Gesserit are like basically have been feeding into the like Arrakis for so long, because like,
sure.
So like the whole movie is Paul like knowing that like this group of people, the Fremen on Dune, think that he is their Messiah, but the Bene Gesserit might also be like their Messiah. So like these two different identities, but that like are the same thing, and like is one real or one not real. And so like every time Paul does something that like he just either he does it because it was foretold And like, and they're like, well, just like it said,
okay.
You know, like he's filling that mark, or is he just like smart and he does it just because, you know, it's, but like the move, like some people are saying that the movie is like, telling you that like the religion is false because they're like, you know, doing all these things, but like, but is it false or is it all like leading to that moment anyway? And it kind of like lets you decide whether like how it concludes with what Paul does, because he kind of like accepts his role as the Kwisatz Haderach, and then the not Muad'Dib, that's his nickname, I can't remember, but anyway, like it's anyway, but the first pace of the movie at the beginning is like this like kind of like slow pace, like him like learning their ways kind of thing, being accepted among them, and like, you know, his kind of like his baptismal moment of riding a sandworm and all this stuff. And then once he becomes one, it like switches into this like platoon-esque Apocalypse Now like war movie where they're like,
oh,
boom, 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 we're like striking at stuff, and we're doing like, we're like coming up out of the sand and doing these like assassin missions and like all this different stuff. And you're just like, and it's like the pace is almost like not frenetic, but it like, it like you have to readjust to what is an almost an entirely different movie than the first 45 minutes that you've been watching. And so, and like, I, it took me a while to like watching it fresh. It took me a while to adjust to it. And I think that's where I was like, I'm not sure if I liked that decision. I don't like when movies decide to like shift their focus and be something different halfway through. Like you could have, I don't know, but that's just sometimes it's like,
I mean, it does sound jarring.
It was a little jarring, and I couldn't figure out why it was jarring for a long time. I'm like, why am I feeling like all of a sudden I'm on fast forward? And I was like, because I kind of was.
Wow.
But that doesn't, I say, distract from the movie. It's just that like all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, we're in a war now. So
gotcha.
But the whole thing is kind of framed by his love story with Chaney, who is like the Fremen, Zendaya,
yeah,
to use real names. And so it's like kind of their Romeo Juliet esque relationship. He's from, you know, from one place, he's from the other place, mm-hmm. and like, will it work? Will it won't work? And it does end up deviating away from the book, which I think was a good choice. And this is where I could spoil it if you want me to, or
okay,
I could not.
Yeah,
so, do you want me to spoil it?
Yeah, I don't. Yes.
So in the book, she like totally accepts that he is the chosen one, basically.
Okay,
and she buys it. In this movie, she's like, all of it's crap. And so, like, at the end, he, like, basically comes down to, like, telling the emperor, like, I'll marry your daughter, and she and I will rule together. You're going to step down now from Emperor of the Universe. And Chaney's just like, well, I'll roll with that. In the book, she just, like, totally goes along with it. And she's, like, the mistress, and they have, a political marriage, the emperor's daughter, and who's, Pugh there. What's her name?
Florence Pugh.
Florence Pugh. Thank you. And they have like a marriage, a political alliance, and then that's it. And in this movie, she like completely rejects Paul and what he's done, because he, I guess, spoilers for Dune, if you just want to stop listening now, but like he accepting his role, and the other great houses don't accept him as their emperor. So then they enter a holy war. So now it's a crusade. Oh. Like, and so he like becomes the very thing that he like has tried to take down.
Oh, and interesting.
It's like really interesting because he's now like caught up in it in some ways. And so like, because like I missed a few beats here, but it's like, this is like the path that has been taken. Like, and it's basically saying like, you chose war, you live with war.
Interesting.
And, yeah. It's like, cause that's like the twist on like the Denny style, right? It's like, it's not it does the thing you don't expect, but Dune already does the thing you don't expect. It is like not the traditional hero's cycle. Like it's not the monomyth. It like, like you think it is, and then it gets to a point where you're like, all right, this is where all the stuff's going to go down, and it just goes in a horrible, horrible direction that like they like can't un like that they can't unspool.
So that's a that majorly changes the ending of the from where the book is. Then no,
that's how the book that's how the book okay. ends too. And that's how the first one ends, and that's like that's it. Except that like he's the whole beginning of this movie is a love story, like, and it's about like them kind of in some ways like becoming one, and him being one with the desert and a Fremen and whatever else. And he basically ends up like using all of that to then use religious fanaticism to become an army to like, so like the Emperor has his Sotokar, which is like his like special fighting force, basically his stormtroopers or whatever.
Sure. Okay.
And like, and so what Paul does is he like takes the Fremen and he makes them his special fighting force.
Sure.
And then he uses them across the galaxy, or he will use them across the galaxy, the universe or whatever. And so it's just a, it's more of a cautionary tale than like a feel
good. I see, yeah.
Yeah. Which I mean, I knew it was coming, and I think it like, it delivers it well. You just have to like, it, like the first one, it benefits from, it's going to benefit from repeat viewers.
From rewatching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. So you think you slightly prefer the first film?
I just like beginnings, if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's like, it has, I don't think it has anything to do with the quality of this one over the last one. It's just like, this is maybe a bad example for you but like all the Lord of the Rings films are great. Like Fellowship all the way to Return of the King. Fellowship is my favorite because it's a great beginning, even though it doesn't have the full conclusion.
Okay.
That's okay for me. Like, because I think getting the team together and learning about the world and all of that kind of exposition-y stuff, that world building stuff is really interesting to me.
I see. Yeah.
Sometimes the payoff is less interesting to me, not always, but in this case, like, because it ends again on a cliffhanger, it feels like a middle chapter. So like there's a lot to be resolved still. It's really good though. I think it's like, it is deserving of the praise that is being reaped upon it.
Where do you think it ranks in his filmography?
That is a very good question. I will use my lookup to actually look up his filmography because I haven't seen all of his movies. So I can't say it's like, well, it's better than Prisoners because I haven't seen Prisoners.
Okay.
So,
but like you've got Blade Runner, you've got Arrival.
Dune Part 2, Dune, Blade Runner, Arrival, Sicario.
Sicario, yeah.
Enemy and Prisoners. So I haven't seen Enemy and Prisoners. Apparently, there's like a, like Jake Gyllenhaal fights a giant spider in Enemy or something like that. I've never seen it.
Fiercest killer in the animal kingdom. You wouldn't believe it.
Right? I should actually look up the producer on this just to make sure.
I'm pretty sure anytime a spider is in any movie,
it's not.
He gets a piece of it.
No, he's not. John Peters is not a producer.
John Peters definitely gets a piece of any Spider-Man movies. Huge for him.
Yeah, huge. Yep, fights a giant spider. There it
is. Madam Web, crazy.
Is there a giant spider? Do they fight a giant spider actually in it?
No.
No.
But
they think about it. And that's close enough.
They think about it.
So you take Prisoners and Enemy aside, I didn't really care for Sicario, truthfully. Like, but
really, yeah.
That is not, I don't think it's a mark on the movie. It's like that genre of movie, if it holds little interest to me, I don't really care about like FBI drug bust cartel movie. Like it just has, I just don't care. And so I would put that at the bottom. I think he just gets better every movie. If I was to kind of look at it, I'd go Sicario and then Arrival. I really liked 24. I liked Blade Runner 2049 a lot. I think it's better than the Blade Runner itself. And then it's Dune and Dune Part 2. I think I like Dune more, but I think I will benefit from watching Dune Part 2 a few more times. He lets his auteur side out a little bit in this one. Like, you can, like, he, like, he doesn't bother to explain things to you. You have to come along for the ride. And yes. Like in the first one and this one, but also like there's a couple of really neat visual things that he does here. So like the Harkonnen's planet has a black sun. And so it's filmed like it's like a washed out black and white, the entire thing. And it's really nice subtextual thematic stuff. Like they have no gray matter within them, right? They're only like they are just black and white, and it's mostly black on the inside. There's like some really good stuff in there. And everybody is, I'd say maybe from Christopher Walken, who was, he's just doing his thing. But like everybody else is just is great.
Tell me about the performances.
Excuse me. I'm an iffy on Timothy Chalamet. Sometimes I feel like he's like underacting almost. Like he's just like not acting enough for my taste. And I did not find that in this movie at all. I thought he was like pitch perfect for a guy. He's supposed to be vaguely 15 in the first movie because that's how old Paul is in the book. But by this movie, he's like the way that they shot him, the way that he decided to act, you literally do watch him grow into this role. And he's like really subtle changes, the way that he stands and his timbre of his voice and the way that they shoot him. Like when some stuff happens and it's like when he accepts his role, they start shooting him. A little bit on a diagonal tilt on the upside at a low angle shot. So he like starts filling
so
the
he
frame.
Looks bigger.
He looks bigger, and it's like really, because he's not a big guy. He's like this, you know, he looks like he's going to like blow over in a strong wind, right? A lot of his acting choices, you don't think that's going to happen at all. Like it's really good. And I think like Florence Pugh doesn't have tons to do in this movie, but her character doesn't have tons to do in the book either. So like, she brings what she can to the table, just kind of like Zendaya with the first one. Like she was barely in it, you know, so you only have so much to work with. Zendaya continues to prove that she's really one of the best of her generation. Who else is in this movie, Frank? Oh, Austin Butler's great. Like, I mean, like I've seen him in Elvis and this, and he's like, he continues to be great. Like, for him. Rebecca
Suede shoes this time.
No blue suede shoes. Rebecca Ferguson also continues to prove that she's one of the best actresses working today. She's just so mesmerizing on screen. I just love her so much. Possibly my favorite Javier Bardem role, I think.
Yeah.
He doesn't have tons to do in the first movie. He's got a lot to do in this one. And he's just
I was going to say, I don't remember much. I remember him having a relatively.
The last thing I saw him in was the remake of The Little Mermaid. And he like so clearly didn't care about being there. you might as well be reading from cue cards. That's how much he didn't care about being there. And so it was like really refreshing to watch this. And I'm like, you're acting. This is wonderful. You love this. Josh Brolin is always good. You know, it's a really quality. It's really quality. Stellan Skarsgård continues to be great.
I love him.
Everybody's good. They all feel like they're in the same movie, which is not something that you can always say for movies.
Nice. Okay.
Right? You know, I think that's a talent that people like miss out on. You know, like sometimes you just like everybody knows what they're in except for you. You have no idea what you're in. And in this case, like everybody knows what they're in. And it's good. Yeah, it's really good. I do recommend the big screen, which is something I don't recommend for everything, but this is not something you want to, you don't want to watch it at home over 4 days. I think
right. Yeah.
You want to see it in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it does strike me that way. Yeah. It's not going to do it any justice.
No, and without, like, spoiling too much, like, that's as much as really I can say on it without, like, just giving it everything.
Okay.
But I'd be curious to hear your perspective because it is sci-fi, you know what I mean? Like, you know how, like, we talk about, like, Star Wars is, like, it's like fantasy but with, like, sci-fi in it? Like, this is, like, sci-fi.
Mm-hmm,
like, you know, even with, It's such an interesting difference. Actually, I really actually would like to. Yeah, I want to know your opinion on some things that like feel fantasy-esque, right? Because like prophecies and messiah figures, that all doesn't feel science fiction. That's
right.
But it is. So, yeah, I'd like to know your opinion on things. So, but it's very good. I do recommend. I also would like to see it not starting at 7 o'clock at night because, you know.
Because old.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, like, old. It's really engaging. Like, it's an incredibly engaging movie, but even then, I'm still like, in IMAX, I was still fading a little bit towards the end.
Yeah.
And so I need
Don't you hate it when somebody else has the remote?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, they don't hit play until 7 o'clock. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, come on. No. What about 10 a.m.? How's that?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I do recommend Dune 2, Dune Part 2. And I know Denny's going to work. He said he was going to work on at least one more film before circling back to Messiah.
Okay.
But there is they are doing it. Like, I think the script's already basically done. Hans Zimmer said he's already writing the music. Like, they're in it. So, yeah.
My understanding is that Dune Messiah, the book,
yep,
that some, talking to someone at work the other day, they mentioned that this movie is more reflective of Dune Messiah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
And Dune Messiah, this is Dune.
Okay.
This is Messiah.
Okay. So like, it is
much, much shorter.
Yes. It looks like it's about three quarters, maybe half as short.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Long. My copy, the one that I have here, just the trade paper, is 281 pages of Dune Messiah, whereas Dune is 685, 87, 89 pages, something like
that. So we're talking,
it's
less than
half.
A
significant difference. Yeah, yes. It's a really pointed story, and this one is, Dune 1 is a nice setup, like that part of Dune. But the second half of Dune is much more related to Messiah than anything. It's kind of like New Hope and Empire and Jedi, where you can directly link Empire and Jedi together. There's some like threads that like drop off that need to be picked up, and like I Am Your Father and stuff like that. Whereas the first one is like, it's almost like an open and closed story. Whereas that's not necessarily the case with the first half of Dune. It like ends before the story's over, but it's more like that where
I see
the threads continue much more closely within Messiah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
As always, you are making me want to see this movie that I previously was only sort of about.
Fascinating. Why were you about it? I'd like to.
Because I was only about the first one.
Oh, this is something that I think we need to explore at a different time because we're a couple of minutes in. So anyway, Frank, where can the people find us?
You can head on over to beerwithgeeks.com. You can find our episode about Dune Part 1 in the archives. And you can go back and check that out. In the meantime, though, you can rate and review us and follow us anywhere that podcasts are found. You can email us at beerwithgeeks@gmail.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio. That would be great.
It would be great. No, it would also be great, Frank, if I saw you again next week. So until next time, cheers.
Cheers.